Hello, friends of the podcast. How are you doing? How's it going for you? I hope all is well and shiny and bright and deeply surrendered and aligned and in flow. Just a small request and desire I have for your soul. Hey, listen, if you're interested in getting some really deep activation, spiritual healing and alignment for yourself, getting clarity on your own spiritual path, and or clearing or healing anything you need cleared or healed from your body, being, soul, or spirit, join me for 3 days of star being and Christ-like healing, October 1, 2, and 3, in upstate Massachusetts, or you can join online. It's a three-day retreat where we're gonna zap a ton of crap right on out of your system and align you with the light in a really powerful way. October 1, 2, and 3. For details, give me a little email and I will email you back with everything you need. KLRubin@gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, RUBIN@gmail.com. Additionally, consider joining us for 2 weeks in Egypt, November 15th to the 26th. 2 weeks in Egypt, friends. We're gonna go to the temples, we're gonna go to the pyramids, we're gonna go to the Sphinx, and we're gonna be raising the vibrational field of the planet to lift the weight of the recent trauma that we've all been going through for the past year or two, from the planet itself, from the collective, and from our own hearts. So this will be a ton of healing, and also like rad travels on the Nile, and an integration time for 2 days at a beach at the end, in Egypt. Have you always wanted to go to Egypt? Well, you should go. Now's the time. Email me, klrubin@gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, RUBIN@gmail.com. And for now, enjoy the cast of Pod.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions you're asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of cash. We laughing, we drafting, the passion to vary. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listen, we traveling. Conscious is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's bask in it. To top it up, the host, all the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Tell me the stuff and we'll cut it out.
Or not. Let's see what happens.
Great. Well, let's leave it in. Hey, everybody. Yeah.
Maybe not. Let's see what I say.
Okay.
So I just was giving you some context on, and I want to talk with Reverend Georgia, our guest today, and I wanted to give you a little context on her before she was here, because I noticed myself, this is good. I'm glad we're doing it like this. I noticed myself feeling like, okay, we're not going to do dick jokes. We're not going to do butt jokes. We're going to be appropriate, grown-up adult people. Even though Reverend Georgia is someone who, she's like a progressive, very leftist, liberal, lesbian, science of mind preacher facilitator. She's not a, you know, Christian, you know, evangelical, right-wing.
Buttoned up, uptight.
Yes,
right.
No. So like the fact that I'm feeling that way is just, it's my own stuff. And I was thinking about it and realizing when I met her and started going to her church in Sacramento so many years ago, I looked up to her. She kind of took on a kind of parent figure in my psyche. She has, like, when I applied to Harvard Divinity School, I asked her if she would write one of my letters of rec, and she did, because, like, you know what I mean? Like, I hold her there. Mm-hmm. In esteem like that. And I found myself going, and side note, she has produced, AKA allowed me to perform all of my raunchiest, most irreverent, insanely inappropriate stand-up comedy and solo shows in her church on the stage where she does the Jesus stuff. She let me do that. So why I'm thinking that we can't be who we are in this conversation is very funny and interesting to look at. And the first part of my message was like, I might be a little toned down today, and we might want to think about not being so dick jokey. And then I was like, hold on, what? And so it's just so interesting how projection works. You know, I mean, part of it is she's a respectable leader in a community that I respect and admire. And that is true. And I don't do dick jokes while I'm chit-chatting with people I respect. You know, you do a dick joke in a stand-up show, that's different than if you're like, hi, Reverend Georgia, how's your dick today? That's different.
But I think back on like that you did an interview or something for a particular newsletter and they were like, we're not going to put this up, the link to this, because we think it puts you in a bad light. And you were like,
yeah,
you know what? My people don't give a shit. So yeah. Like you do you, but that is me. So we're talking about that sort of ongoing challenge between like authenticity versus appropriateness of space, but also like we don't want to mute ourselves, but we do have sub personalities that are still authentic that we can live out through.
That's right.
Like, you know, when you're visiting grandma, you don't tell as many dick jokes unless your grandma's down with the dick jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you're being false or fake. So it's like, where do we find that space of being authentic?
Yeah, totally. I think the bottom line for me is I noticed myself going, I'm going to feel the room out when she's here and feel like, how what is this space? And I was wanting to give you a heads up so that maybe you would feel the room out and not just be like, hey, bitch, which you yeah. wouldn't do, by the way.
I feel like I feel the room sometimes more than you. So I'm just saying.
No, I would argue I feel the room as much, if not more than you. I just ignore it and do what I want. But you behave. you behave appropriately. We're both aware. And I just go, shake it up. And you're like, how about not?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. No, that I think that's a valid. No, I love that. On the topic of identity, I read something this morning that I'm just kind of interested in. Like, it's such just the bare bones seeds of a thought. So I don't know. It's just worth talking about, but I haven't done enough research deeper on it. And that is, I'm reading the book, The Spiritual Enneagram by Chris Hurwitz. So good.
It's the only book I recommend on the Enneagram to people ever.
Even though he doesn't seem to really go into depth on individual types. He's more talking sort of overarching spiritual philosophical ways of approaching the Enneagram, right?
No, you have to read the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. But he said something that just made me go, ooh, God, I'm super curious about that. And that was the thing about I think he called it the soul child.
Okay.
And it was someone else's idea, not his, about somebody's theory that your type, so we're going Enneagram for a second.
Yeah.
That your type might not even be your type, but that your integrated type, you know, like, so an Enneagram, for those who don't quite know, some say that, like I'm on the 3-6-9 triangle, and in times of like growth and more integration, I travel towards the 6 more. I'm more like a 6.
Huh.
And in times of disintegration, I travel towards the 9 and I'm more like a 9.
Huh.
I
thought it was the other way around.
A 3 goes to 6 in good and to 9 in bad. That's binary thinking. But but then some say, no, the integration, disintegration thing is not really true. You just can travel along those paths in either direction at different times for different reasons. And then some say you can shoot all over the Enneagram yourself at any time. But regardless, this one thought was that your true type, in the sense of like your soul's child, the soul child, as they call it, basically the type you're truly born to be or born into. Okay. And then you experience the childhood wound, which pushes you into the type you live in. But that your true type is your integrated type. So like as a 3, I am yearning to return to more of a 6 type.
Interesting.
In times of full, like if I were to really like fully integrate myself and find myself as deeply grounded as I can or whatever the healing work you do, you'd become a... But what was funny, I'll just finish the thought. And that is, I read that and immediately was like, yes, I'm going to work on being a 6. Like that was what went through my head. And not 2 sentences later, they said, now that being said, you know, you still don't want to work directly on your type as a sense of accomplishment. You want to just do your inner work and grow and right. You shouldn't set goals within your, and specifically they're like, for example, the three is probably just going to try and be a six because he's got a goal and he wants to achieve his sixhood. So be careful yeah. about that. And I just felt very seen and very called out.
Like
within the same sentence, I did a thing and then they called me out in that same thing three sentences later.
I get it. That's so fun. I love it. I don't think
but I still love that idea.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think I was aware that they say that in the Enneagram teachings of like not to strive for anything in particular. Just do your work and then just see what occurs, which is what I've done because I didn't know any better. But I would imagine there'd be plenty of people looking at their Enneagram going, okay, I'm going to integrate toward my integration number.
Right.
Right?
I just read it today and I should go back and read it again, but I may be speaking a little too simplistically about that idea, but just the sense of like, if you set that as an achievement, that's yeah. not the right mindset.
Yeah.
And then I had already done that. Like I had
yeah,
done
no,
that
I get
the
it.
Second I read
I,
it.
I fully get that you did that and that they called you on it. And I love that. I think you're less alone on that impulse is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people would read their type, learn what the integration thing is, and be like, okay, let's get to work on being that.
Yeah, I want to think more like a six thinks.
Yeah, I'm going to try hard to become a six. Meanwhile, like I had this talk with Rami, actually. We were talking about, how did this come up? I was saying, we were talking in depth about some Enneagram thing, and I went, you know, I realized the other day, when I'm doing well, I am more like a blah, blah, blah. And when I'm not doing well, I am more, oh, what is it that the eight integrates to the two? And then we disintegrate to the five. And I'm like a million. And I told them that like 1,000,000%, that's what I see in my life. And I said, but I didn't, how did that happen? I just did my work. And Rami said, well, that's how it's supposed to go.
Right.
And I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Right. You don't set the intention of being more like a two, you just start doing your inner work, which integrates you toward, you know, just yeah. mental health work in general or spiritual health work in general. And
yeah.
And as you get more in touch with self, you'll find that you are going to be more like a two, according
just
to these teachers.
So interesting. Here's another topic.
Right. Kind when of you see it and you get called by it right away, you just go, oh my God, how did they know?
I mean, that is one of the things, right, about the Enneagram. That's why we keep talking about it, is that it ends up being so on point so many times in so many ways. Just like, I have to say it, human design.
Human design.
It is ridiculously spot on, regularly, repeatedly, all the goddamn time. Yeah. So I'm excited to talk to Georgia about like the positioning she held in my life at the time when I met her. And I have so many questions for her because I really wish I could have the camera on. I want to be talking with you with my face, but the Wi-Fi is making my face not available. I have so many things I want to ask her, like, yeah. And I'll save it for when she's here, but you know, you ever have, I wanted to ask you, like, do you ever have any figures like that when you were a kid that you looked up to someone who was like a part of some world? Maybe it was like your English teacher or your whoever. And then as you grow up and you have a different perspective on the context in which you met that person, that your sense of the person changes. Do you know what I mean?
I think so. I mean, I understand intellectually what you're saying, and I'm trying not to get too lost in a reverie of thinking about an example in my own life, but I do understand the framing. Do you mean though that they,
well,
that how they, do you mean you just get perspective on, oh, that was really important to me then because of this, or do you
well,
just,
it's more like I actually am wanting to hear a specific example from your life, because what I'm interested in is that thing where, like, let me think of a different example. Okay, I got one. When I was in my like preteens, junior high and early high school time, I was the head chorister in the Miami Choral Society. And I was like a big nerdy singer and I had a good voice. And so, and I was like a teacher's pet. So the choir conductor and I kind of became friends. He's like this middle-aged black man. And I was this 15-year-old white girl. And we were buddies because I was smart and a little ahead of my time and a goody-goody and trying too hard to win his approval and all that. So when I think about the Miami Choral Society and the space it held in my world as a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, and then I go in adulthood back and I see a Miami Choral Society show, I go, oh, that's nice. The kids did a song. Look at the kids being talented singers and singing beautifully. Wow, Mr. Sharp did a great job conducting. I know what conducting is. I know how gigs work. I know that they had to book this venue months ahead. Like, you have a whole different perspective on what is the Miami Choral Society. When you're 12, it holds this like reverent place. It's this magic place. And they drive you in the car and all the people are there. And then you have to sing and do well. Then you grow up and you realize, oh, that's like people doing stuff just like me. And so it diminishes in its kind of, I don't want to say diminishes, but it takes on a different location in your sense of power over yourself. You know how when you're a kid, you don't feel a ton of agency a lot of the time, or maybe some kids did. I didn't. I felt like I got driven to this place and I was going to succeed at it. And I succeeded at it. And, but it was very like, not, I didn't have any perspective on like, these are just people doing a job. And we were just kids singing some songs, which is how I see it now. So similarly with Georgia coming on today, I was like going to that church looking for saviorness. I was like, help me. I'm not okay. I need these beliefs and these teachings to change me. Like I was in a real soaking it all in serious place where the church was a big deal. And I should really give context to people. Science of Mind churches are not typical churches. They're a lot to do with affirmation and positive thinking, and the relationship to the divine is quite different than, say, the relationship to the divine in like a evangelical Christian situation. It's less, it is religious in the sense that there's a set of beliefs and they believe them, but it isn't conservative, I would say. The values are not conservative.
And it's also, just to clarify, Science of Mind is not Scientology and it is not Christian Science, just so people know. Those are other words that have science in the religious name.
That's right. And I'm excited to ask Georgia to define for us, like, what does it mean? What is Science of Mind?
What is
like
the core tenet? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how do they define it? What is the... And so at the time, what I'm trying to get at is at the time, I really took on the principles and the practices because I really just was looking for something to change me and help me. And now I would hold it more like, I passed through that. I took from it what I like. I like a lot of it. And then I did other stuff, like 80 other things, of which that was one thing. So in that time, I like desperately needed it to be something for me. And now I'm like, oh, look, Science of Mind is a thing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think, I mean, it's a slightly warmer version of other stories you've told me about, like, you know, some of the schools you've gone to, like, they had to be super important at the moment because they needed to be the crucible through which you were being transformed. But then when you pulled away from them, or as you got distance on them, they became more and more just, oh, this was good. This was awful. That was fantastic. That was awful. Like, and you were able to step back from them and be able to take what was needed and leave the rest behind and not lionize it and make it have it. You know, it's true for any teacher. I would say, like, my examples would just be like college teachers. There was always sort of a cult of certain teachers in college.
Exactly.
In theater, especially.
That's what I'm looking for.
And
that's what I'm looking
and
for.
And you needed to, yeah. And you need to have that cult of just to, in order, like, especially with a younger mind, like, we need that cult. Cult is the wrong word, but you need that sort of like, yes, this is the stuff. And you are the guru that is passing this stuff on to me so that I can really steep myself in it and really take it on 100% in order to really do the work. Whereas if you start with that perspective and distance, you maybe don't go as deep. You kind of go like, yeah, this is cool. I see you for what you are. So I'm just going to hold you back there and I'm going to take on some of it and leave some of it away. And I mean, I'm just sort of talking through the process now. I think we kind of need to go. Sometimes that the distance between that is shorter. Sometimes we go in really deep for just a minute and then back out. But that idea of We have to treat someone as huge. Go ahead.
What's an example of that in your life? I'm trying to get you to talk specifically about you. Like, where have you done any version of that?
I mean, in college and undergrad, I there were sort of two main acting teachers. And there was definitely like a little bit of a like cult of follow between them. And there was sort of weird tension between them.
Yeah.
And I was always sort of, you know, as I am to this day, sort of my nine nature or whatever, is to kind of straddle both worlds and be accepted by all and have that. I kind of had a little of that perspective, but I was definitely in the sexier cult also, like the one teacher who was more big deal, you know, what she was doing was what was up. And the other was kind of like, whatever, she's cool, whatever, she's fine. Anyway, but you had to like let, like, so I had perspective on the one already. She was just like, yeah, sure, she can teach me a few things. That's fine.
Right.
But the other one you sort of treated as God. And it was really important because it was, you know, really revelatory what I was getting exposed to, you know, as in my, with my young mind and from a small town. And here I was being given these much bigger tools of exploration and like studying like the Polish, masters animal association theater and like all these really intense wild things. And then you zoom out from those a few years later and go like, okay,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad I did that.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I did that. I have no regrets, but boy, was it not as
big a deal,
all encompassingly the thing as,
yes,
as you make it be in the moment, because you need to, in order to really
get,
you know,
it.
This has to be the most delicious meal I've ever eaten, even though really my parents do that all the time. They'll be like, oh my God, we had this Thai restaurant. There's a new Thai restaurant. We had this dish and they decide that it's the best dish. And then I'll taste it. I'll be like, that is a perfectly good version of that dish. I'm so happy that you've decided it's the best dish, because that actually turns up your enjoyment of the dish every time you eat it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
That's fun. I think what I'm wondering is, did you ever have the feeling of, let's see, how do I frame this? It's almost like, okay, here's, let me put it like this. I grew up, I feel like what people go through in their teens and early 20s, I went through in my 20s and early 30s. Now,
which thing?
Well, I'm going to get there. And I'm also radically generalizing, because who the hell grows up in any normal kind of way? And what does normal mean? But if you were healthfully parented and you know how in high school and early college, you're like trying stuff on, and maybe I'm this guy, maybe I'm this guy, I'm going to wear these hats now, you know, and you're like, maybe I'm the lady who tells a lot of jokes, or maybe I'm the lady who's like mysterious in the corner, you know?
Katie, I just interrupt you to say, at one point in my life, I literally said, I'm the dragon shirt guy. I'm the guy who wears dragon shirts. So I have this embarrassing collection of dragon shirts in my attic. Just so you know. Go on, finish your thought.
I cannot tell you how happy that makes me.
That I'm the dragon shirt guy.
That is so hilarious. I don't know what to do. Let's bring Georgia in and we'll come back to this point.
Great. We'll just, anyway, to the point of identity, we sometimes call ourselves something
dragon
in order to explore an idea.
But I have so many things to say about it. We'll get back to it.
Okay. All right. Maybe we can ask Georgia about being a dragon shirt guy.
Exactly. Oh my God. Reverend Georgia!
Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you? It's good to see you.
You too. My goodness.
You're in Colorado?
I am in Colorado, but I'm heading east very, very soon. And you look incredible. You look trim and slim and healthy as a clam. Is that a thing people say? No. Nope.
You're happy as a clam or healthy as a horse, which is not necessarily a thing you want to say to a person.
There it is. Reverend Georgia, this is my dear friend, Cassidy Brown. He's the co-host of this wacky podcast that we do.
Hi, Cass. How are you?
Great.
Nice to see you.
Well, I want to tell you, Georgia, we have been talking. We always talk a little bit before the guest comes on, and then we sort of interview you a little bit. But I was telling Cassidy about the phenomenon of your role in my reality. And I was realizing before we got on, I was having that feeling of, I started to leave Cassidy a voice memo saying, okay, so George is coming Now she's very important, and we're not going to make dick jokes, and we're not going to do butt jokes. And then I was going, wait a minute. This is a woman who allowed me to produce the raunchiest comedy I have ever written on her church's stage. What am I worried about? And then it got me thinking that it's such a compliment to you, because I realized as I was thinking that way that in that period of my life, when I was going to your church all the time, Georgia, you took on such an important role in my world. You were a teacher I could trust. You were an adult I respected in a time when I was rebuilding my entire inner structure, as we do in early recovery, as we do in early spiritual times. And I really held you up and do to this day as someone who I just respect a lot. And it was so much so that I was like, maybe I can't say the word penis now. And then I was like, wait, she can take it. It's okay. But anyway, that's just a deep compliment to you. You became a kind of parent figure for me for a few years there, and it'll stay with me forever.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I just think you're one of the most creative people on the planet. And if I could have had a daughter that was as creative as you, I would have loved that.
Oh my God, I'm gonna cry. Thank you. I love you. Can you tell us, okay, I've got so many questions for you about the work you do. We were wondering, how is it, first of all, I want to know personally how you found your way to Science of Mind in particular, and why that particular path. There's so many paths. You've explored so many of them. You still do. I know that. You integrate a million things with the work you do. What was it about that particular path that drew you? And second to that, how do we define or understand what Science of Mind is? Are those answerable questions?
Sure. Of course. Yeah. So let me go to the first, how I found it. It was actually quite by accident. I was unchurched for many, many years, grew up Catholic, angry at the church, angry at God. And I was in Santa Rosa, and I was trying to get a date with somebody who was in the Santa Rosa church choir. So I thought, well, you know what? I'm just going to show up and sit in the front row, and I'll look really pious, and she'll definitely want to go out with me. So I did that. And the minister walked out, and she said what I say every Sunday, and that is, you are whole, perfect, and complete, just as you are right this second. And when she said it, I started to cry. And it touched me in such a deep level, because I thought I was so broken. I thought I was so such an abomination in the eyes of God. Not in other eyes. I had done enough internal work and enough political work to know that being a lesbian wasn't the end of the world. But I still had a deep, deep shame around God. And so when she said that, it just broke, that one sentence, and it just broke through. And I thought, God, I got to know more about this. Of course, I did not get the date. I was sobbing and snot was running everywhere. And it was an aborted attempt, but I started to go to classes and go to the church and start studying. And pretty soon I was a practitioner. That's kind of like a chaplain. And then shortly after that, I was in seminary.
Wow.
I just thought, you know, what brought me to the church was that statement. What brought me to ministry was seeing the minister, and then a different minister who had come baptize a four-year-old boy. And the words that he said to that child to include him in the body of God and just the whole idea of spirituality was so moving to me. I thought, you know what? That's what I really want to do. I want to do that.
Wow.
So I signed up for seminary the next day.
That is incredibly moving. I have to admit, ignorantly, I don't think I realized or knew that seminary was a thing that Science of Mind Minister?
It's the word that people use here in Sacramento. But some of that is cultural, because we have a fairly large African-American community, and that's something they're comfortable with. So they often call me preacher, but also reverend. And yeah.
Okay. So I think I thought in my mind that with Science of Mind, there was rigorous training in the Science of Mind lineage and teachings. I don't think I really got that you're going, that it's seminary.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, it is primarily Science of Mind teaching, although You know, there, because we're a church that believes all paths lead to God, and because the founder of the Science of Mind wrote extensively about other religions, and what he did was to take all of the major religions and find what was common in them, and then also what was common in Greek philosophy. And so he took those two things and all of the common beliefs and thoughts, he wrote into the Science of Mind.
Wow. Okay. And so is that sort of, if you were going to essentialize what Science of Mind is that how you would sort of define it?
I would call it, the ancient wisdoms of all religions and the recognition that there is nothing new in Science of Mind. It's all just a combination of all those religions.
Got it. Okay. And is it fair to say that, I guess what I remember a lot and I've has stayed with me a lot is the sort of affirmative shape of the prayers. The prayers have a very affirmation heavy orientation.
Right. The prayer is actually a five-step prayer. It's not a rote prayer, but it has five distinct steps that we get through before we get to the end of it.
Can you break that down for us?
The first step is the recognition, what we call recognition, that there is only God, that there is nothing outside of that, that we human beings haven't brought to it. Another way I say it is that that love, which is one of our other words, our primary words for God, is all there is. Everything else, there's no external evil, there's no external devil, that outside of what we make up in our mind, that all evil and all devilishness stops and starts in the mind of human beings. The second step is unification, recognizing that we are one, that there's no separation, that we are one with that essence, that one love, that one being. The third step is what we often call the affirmation step, which is simply an affirmative statement that that which we are seeking is already here now, and that the reason we can't taste it, feel it, spend it, love it, be with it, is because we can't see it. It's not that there's a withholding of our good. There is an internal withholding of our acceptance of that good, a worthiness issue. The third one is thanksgiving. And it's not a matter of good manners, not that kind of saying thank you. We want people to have good manners, but that's not what it's about. It's really just about a recognition that that which we already are seeking is seeking us now. And it's sort of like a wow. You know, I liken it to, instead of thanksgiving, it's whoa. If that affirmation step is true, then wow, how fabulous is this? And the last one is letting it go, just letting it go and not repeating that same. We don't repeat the same prayer. We repeat the same five steps, but we don't repeat the same prayer.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. And have you found personally, I mean, this is probably an obvious question, but I'd love to hear all of any experiences you've had on this front. Have you found, what are some of the experiences you've had with this particular form of prayer that make it so important and lasting and central to your reality? Like, what do you have any stories of, like, one time I prayed about this thing and it was miraculous, it was different, it did something new for me that other forms of prayer didn't do?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Probably the one that is the most amazing to me, that I didn't think was possible in my lifetime. I was with somebody and we had a child together, and I was not the birth mother. She was the birth mother. And in California at that time, lesbians could not adopt. This was many years ago. And when the child was 6 years old, she took her and left. And I took it all the way to the Supreme Court, but I did not prevail because there was no law protecting same-sex partners at the time. So I had huge, huge anger and resentment. And I knew it was making me sick. I knew it was not helping me to hold on to this, but I couldn't let it go. And so finally, I did the prayer. And when I say we don't repeat the prayer, we don't repeat the exact words of the prayer, but I repeated the five steps of affirming that I was able to forgive. And it took like a week, and I was absolutely able to forgive. And it was, I mean, miraculous, because I had rage. I had absolute rage.
I get that deeply. I wonder what your thoughts are on this point. One of the things I've experienced with prayer that I I guess the game changer for me that took me from being someone who was like, sure, I'll pray because they say if you pray, it helps you, to being someone who's like a big prayer supporter and teaches people now how to pray and how amazing it is. The transition for me was acting as if it would help. And then I always talk about too, in the stuff I teach, the state of the heart. Something I learned in the Sufi healing school I went to is they talked a lot about, if you have a sincere request of God, and it is a, you could say, righteous request, right? If it's something in alignment, right? That it will be met. And I was able, I think I have to give, I've always given a lot of credit to my acting training and to just being a highly sensitive person. I could take myself into the energy of, okay, let's do the energy of sincerity and openness and authenticity and ask from the bottom of my heart in a vulnerable way. Because as an actor, what we do is take ourselves into different states of consciousness, right? And so I was lucky in that way because I find now, and I wonder if you find this, that there are, when I'm helping folks wake up to the possibilities and the gifts of prayer, it's hard for a lot of people to get into a state, particularly if they're angry at God for any reason, whereby they want to try surrender, prostration, openness because of their trauma and their pain around it, but also because sincerity and authenticity are really like energies you got to teach people how to access. I notice they don't, people don't always just come into the world going like, oh yeah, okay, do sincerity, got it. So anyway, I think what I'm getting at is I'm wondering, when you're teaching people the steps of how to pray in your way, what do you run into as like common challenges people have with learning how to open and be sincere the way you were with that prayer that you did?
You know, a lot of it is depends on how much they've been harmed by religion in the past and how many disappointments they've had. You know, a lot of it depends on that. But what I teach is, and what Ernest Holmes taught is, and Ernest Holmes is the founder of this, of Science of Mind. And what he said is that you have to have two things in order to have an effective prayer. One of them is the five steps. You have to know these five steps. Now that's, you know, that's his thing. I'll get to that later, but it's the five steps. And the other, he calls it fire. You have to have a fire. And it's the same kind of fire that you're talking about with humility. You have to have almost a desperation that allows you to give up your ego and just receive. He called that the art of calm expectancy, that if you could have calm expectancy and just know that God is the provider, then you're ahead of the game. My concern about the five steps and my concern about any of us teaching prayer is I worry that sometimes people don't try it because they're worried they're not going to do it right. And if they don't do it right, they're going to make it worse for themselves. Oh, I'm going to really piss God off if I don't do it right, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, 100%.
I would love to ask a question of both of you because it has to do with what something Katie just said about like acting as if, which is what actors do. And I struggled and still do to this day, but struggled very drastically against any form of spirituality because of what I witnessed.
Right.
In religion, I was raised Unitarian, which is about as soft-pedaled a religion as you can get, right? It's like, yeah, cool. Just think about it. Do what you want.
Just be nice to each other.
Choose a belief. It's cool. But Buddhist, whatever. You can be Christian. I don't care. But I was witnessing around me all these much more strident religions, as I will just call them. And then And watching what I considered to be sort of unfounded belief or like faith without framing or without, and I would be like, y'all are being fooled. And that got into my head then. So then I was like, it was hard for me for a really long time to even allow myself to take on the possibility of belief. Because if I believe that, I'm a chump. I'm not going to let you make me a chump, anything, because it can't be proven in a sense, you know, by my scientific brain or whatever, you know? And it was actually, I think, Katie, you have said it a few times, the idea of acting as if. And that's been actually a very transformative space for me to enter into. Cool, but what if? Try it on. Like, but allowing, so it's, I've always been able, since I've gotten better at spirituality, whatever, I've been able to do the thing where I'm like, oh, this is complete and utter weirdo hokum, and I'm super into it, and it totally makes sense, and I'm going with it. And they're both simultaneously existing, and I'm okay with that. And that's a change. I guess my point is that idea of acting as if, you know, can that be as powerful as, or is that a form of fire or zeal? Like, do I have to believe it with my whole self for it to, quote, work?
Got it. You want to start with this one, Georgia?
Well, here's what I'd say. Yes, you're going to have to get it. You're going to have to move it from acting. You're going to have to move it from thought into belief, because not every thought is a belief. And in our religion, we say it is done unto you as you believe, not as you think, not as you hope, not as you wish, but as you believe. But the practice of getting to that place often requires us to act as if. And then at some point, it's going to be what you just said. You know, then I figured, I felt different. I felt like, oh, you know, maybe this is true. I'm just reading a book now by Dennis Merritt Jones. And he said, you know, the mind needs linear rules. It needs linear direction, but the heart doesn't. And so what we experience when we have fire is that the heart just bypasses the mind and it connects with that spiritual universal truth that's just out there. Sometimes we have to use the mind to get ourselves open enough to do that, but it's really the heart that will get you there.
Yeah, it all makes me think of the thing where I have a friend who is a naturopath doctor, very, you know, went to all the colleges, got all the degrees, very sciencey. And I was doing some sessions with her where she was doing integrative parts work with me, and then which was really helpful and healing. And then there came a point where every parts work session I was channeling divine light. That's what I do. So it would just come in the room and she'd be like, what are you doing? This is different from all my other clients. And I was like, well, it's turned into I'm doing what I do at you now, because we've done what this is and the light is moving because that's what the light does. So now you need to pay me. And then we switched and now she's working. So we were giving each other a gift. But what's interesting with the reason I mentioned her is because her thing is like, I'll say words to her, like, okay, the energy is a yes for me to move to New York. For example, I've been praying about, it's a long story. Like I get a yes. God is like talking to me clearly. You're going to New York. Now my emotional body and my mind are like, huh? Really? At this age? You know, all the things that we do in the mind and the emotions. But I'm so familiar with following guidance and following what I call the light that, like, I'm just like, well, that's what the guidance is. So that's what I do. Now I have a process around it as a human being, but I'm going to follow because for me, surrender works better than not surrender. So all this is a long-winded way of saying, she said to me once, I want you to teach me how to follow that light thing. How do I know what is of the light? How do I get what's light and what's heavy? How do I get what's of God and what's not? And at first my response was, okay, you know, 25 years of energy healing, 3 hours a day sometimes, did it for me. I can't promise you that if we do 5 sessions or whatever, your heart's going to blow open and you'll hear the, you know, I wound up this way because of every random crazy thing I've done to try to heal. And the results of it have been this awareness of divine light. And the more we talked about it, and I got into some of the concepts about, okay, well, how sincere are you asking God this, this, and that? Or I asked her some questions and she said, oh, well, I'm not going to like surrender. I'm not going to like not be in charge. Are you insane? And I was like, okay, got it. I see where we are now.
Yeah.
Then I learned about her life. She is like raised by loving people and went to Harvard and then went to Princeton and had all the money and was always pretty and tall and thin and all the boys liked her. And so like, she just has no reason in this reality to, why would you submit? Why would you bow? Why would you surrender? And so that's a very long-winded way of saying I am curious myself about folks like Cassidy, who we've talked many times about. He was well-parented. He has like loving, healthy parents who taught him that he's worthy of existing. And so the fire is not really there in the same way that I was in so much pain for so many years that the desperation was constant. And this is something that comes up in my healing classes a lot, is I have students who like, they're kind of upset and need some help. But the ones who like meet God and the light is flying through their heart and now they're a healer, it's the ones who were like raped a lot. Sorry to be gross. Or like the ones who have been through the shit storm, because you will just bow everything to the supremacy of anything that could help you. And so I say all of that to say, I wonder, Cass, what it would take. Like, I like to think of things in terms of curiosity and wonder. Like, what would it take to get yourself in a state of like, maybe there's something even better than what I already have access to? That if I prayed to that and bowed to the even betterness, like you're already good, you're centered and grounded and you have a life you love. What if there's even more? And perhaps you have fire for the even more?
Yeah. I mean, I think I feel like I have a junior version of that over the last year and a half or two or 3 years of just finally coming to a space of feeling like I've been fine, but not actually, you know, there were things that really needed to be finally addressed, and working with you and doing some therapy and doing stuff. I feel like that was entering into a state of more true, like of belief, of heart belief, of surrender. You know, some of it was like surrendering to the therapist in some ways, like not as a guru, but as a person who was offering me stuff that I really had to accept on its surface value, just and say, no, I do, you know, self-compassion work and stuff like that, and taking that on instead of talking myself out of it, believing it. And so like, I think, so yeah, I don't think, I don't wish for a trauma to push me to that space. I feel like I'm taking a more gradual pathway towards that.
And that's a great thing. I mean, that's a great thing. I often say, if I could have a church filled with 12-step people, I'd be in heaven, because they know how to surrender. And I think it's one of the biggest stumbling blocks to get people closer to their own divinity is that idea of self-control. And it's hard to give up.
It is hard, particularly if your life has worked out pretty fine. Why would you?
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I guess I hear you saying, Cass, like you hit, like the 12-step framing of it would be something like you hit bottom a little bit with a couple things. And you were like, all right, I'm at a bottom with these things. They're not awful bottoms. I don't live on the street. I'm not homeless and selling my body for drugs.
Right.
But I'm not great on these points. And so I'm open. I'm going to try something different because I've hit bottom with these things. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I definitely. And I hit a point and I felt very like privileged to have the space to do that, to be like, well, I've got some room. I've got room in my schedule now to address these bottoms.
What do you think, Georgia, to that point of the idea of, with regard to COVID? Now I'm going to fully switch gears just for because it's coming to me. You know, I've had this idea all throughout COVID that I'll get when I'm in the channeling space, and I'll get when I'm in a deep state of communion with the oneness. You know, there's a real deep and profound up-leveling of the consciousness of the collective, that we're actually being pushed through a crucible of some kind and waking up fast. Like the collective is like being pushed through a painful, uncomfortable crucible with everything that's going on right now. I have my own little sort of cosmological beliefs about what's doing that and why now and all of that. But I wonder how you frame this insane period of time we've been in. Does that match?
Yeah. I do think that we're being pushed to oneness in a way that we hadn't been pushed before. Not only COVID, but also, you know, you'll remember being here. This is a very socially justice-oriented spiritual community. And, you know, so all of this stuff around racial systemic racism has helped to push people. And in fact, I use that sometimes when I get people who are in the state of Cass where, you know what, my life is good. I don't need to be doing all this stuff. And, you know, I think it's important that we realize that we're not alone. And there's a lot of people who are suffering who can use our prayer, who can use our consciousness. So, yeah, I think we are. And I think it's a good thing. And it's not, you know, good and happy have never been the same. They're not synonyms. And, you know, we just have to kind of work with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. What do you think about this idea? There's a human design principle that says human beings, they think they're going for happiness. We all are like, I want to feel happy all the time and all the joy and the ecstatic feelings. But that really, at the end of the day, what we're actually seeking is fulfillment. That when we find right fulfillment and satisfaction, that is actually more lasting and sustainable than the seeking of ecstatic, blissful joy.
Yeah. Or things.
Or things.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just read a little bit about this book I'm reading. It is my sincere belief that the world doesn't need yet another self-help guru or prosperity book outlining the greatest techniques on how to win the lottery or how to go from rags to riches in 21 days. And then he said, what the world needs is a new perspective regarding what gives meaning and value to our life, to recognize that everyone strives for essentially the same thing. And it isn't money or stuff. It's something much less tangible. Behind every thought, deed, and action of every human being of rational mind on this planet is the desire for freedom, inner peace, and a life worth living, a life of purpose. And I really like that whole new approach to prosperity.
That's good. That's really good.
I had a weird moment the other day that just brings up. Yesterday, I was messaging, I was chatting with my girlfriend who's on a trip right now. So we were messaging back and forth. And she said, how are you? And I said, I'm feeling oddly like ... content with a question mark. And she came back with, but melancholy, because my tone, even on text, was not one of happiness.
Yeah.
Or joy at that idea. And I realized I was in a rare moment of almost neutrality.
Yes.
But that my perception of that space was slightly melancholic because we don't recognize it as joy. Like, well, it's not joy, so it must be sad. So like to sit there for just a brief moment and just feel like, I am. Was a weird feeling that most of us rarely experience.
And if we experience it, we kind of feel a little like, oh, maybe I should be searching happiness for somewhere. Let me go do something happy. There's no value in that contentment, in that quiet contemplation of love. Yeah.
Absolutely. I there was a moment, God, when was that? There was a moment where I was driving a car or something and I said to someone, it's been a few years where I feel peace all the time. What do I do now? Like, there's actually like a real existential crisis in a way of when I left the Sufi school, which I sort of consider like the first of the three energy healing schools I went to. They were each 4 years long. The first one, I left there so peaceful and so just so connected to the divine, but broke. No money.
Yeah.
Didn't care though. So much peace. Then that got old. And I studied a bunch of systems that were like, here's how you make the money. And then I made all the money. And I was like, I'm a money lady. I'm fancy and I make the money now. And I lost some of the peace. And then I said to God, okay, I'm not willing to have one without the other here. Like, I need a life that works. I need to be abundant enough to maintain this peace. And I need to be peaceful enough while I'm building abundance that I'm not selling my soul for abundance, but I'm also not pretending I live in I'm okay with being on the street because I'm not, or being like vagrant or like, I'll be a couch surfing hippie person, which is fine if you're doing that. It was a lie for me at that point. And so it was interesting how the three schools I studied in, the third one, it's less of a school, but it was basically just learning how to read the Akashic records and be in the energy of the Akasha, which is really just a way of saying divine. That particular frequency, for whatever reason for me, was the nice blend of, I have peace in my heart and I can give things to the world that people pay me to do in a way that is fulfilling and meaningful. But I still regularly feel like, I'm so peaceful. Is this okay? How do people give a shit about making money and succeeding in the world if you're just at peace? And the answer is like, you kind of don't care, except to whatever degree is necessary for your well-being and sanity, I guess I would say. Does that resonate with you, Georgia? Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, I've never been a big financial moneyed person, unfortunately. But this whole idea of downwardly mobile spirituality has never attracted me. I can't say that it ever has. I think that this idea of greed is part of what's happening in the world today. I mean, I think it's the basis for voter suppression is greed. I think the basis for police brutality is greed. I think all of that is interconnected. So, I think we have to, when you say it's a whole new world and I do think we're being pulled to oneness, but we have to do it in a way that makes sense for everybody. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I find that a lot of times I do run into this thing where my spiritual heart is very like, okay, I'll give you an example. I'm moving, right? So I built this healing center here in Colorado. It's very beautiful and it's this big space and it was lovely and amazing. And I was very proud of it. And I've been like selling the furniture off and selling the art. And you know, it's like, there's sadness and grief with pieces of that. And there's also like a lot of lightness with it. It's like, oh yeah, this needs to go because it feels better. And I get it. You know, anyway, in that process, just today, I was selling this like very expensive couch I bought that was too expensive. Like just objectively, it was too much of a couch. And this guy came to buy it and everything in me wanted to be like, I don't know, you give me what you want. Like I wanted to just be... I paid $2,000 for the couch and my like teachings about what to get. I'm not going to get $2,000 back because it's been sitting outside on a patio and I have to wipe it down. And it's so I'm going, okay, I'm listening. And God's like, yeah, $1,300. That's what you should ask for that. And I'm going like inside. I'm just like, what if you give me $200? Like that's what everything. I don't care. He could have the couch. I don't care actually about the couch and the dollars. But then you have to. There's this weird negotiation between like, however, rent is a thing and food is a thing and I'd like to be comfortable and these clothes cost money. You get it. But that tension is, and with my students, this comes up a lot where I attract into my classes a lot of empaths and a lot of creatives and a lot of people who are like, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't. In the realm of oneness and God's vision of what is in the true nature of consciousness, but it does in your 3D life with the temple that you have to care for so that you can feel God through your temple. You want the temple well cared for.
Yeah. It's a tricky balance. I mean, we're hurting now because people haven't been in the church for well over a year. They just started coming back. And so, finances have been really tight. We've made it fine, but we've been really frugal. So we got this new rental and it was a big choir, 68 Pearson Choir. And they're paying $100 a night to come and practice in the sanctuary. But the Yolo County where we are just required a new mask mandate. Everybody indoors, vaccinated or not, has to wear a mask. So they've decided that they aren't going to practice here. But she said, you know, we're so grateful for everything you've done and how supportive you've been. We're going to keep paying rent all through August, even though we're not going to be here. And I said, and believe me, I need the money. And if the board heard me, they would fire me on the spot because I heard myself say, oh, no, that's OK. I know you're hurting as well as we are. You don't have to pay anything. And all the board members are running through my head as I'm saying it. But, you know, it's just how I am. I am like you. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. No, I know. It's such an interesting, weird thing to be on this planet in a body when your consciousness is so aware of the space of oneness. Like this is a nothing. It's a cloth. You could have, it's just so weird.
But did you get $1,300 for the couch?
Okay. Here's what happened.
I couldn't use gas.
So I'm hearing 1300 and he's going, the guy goes, what do you want for it? And in my heart, I'm like, just take it. I don't care. Get it out of here. And so I know enough to just not say anything. So I go like, well, I paid $2,000 for it. And he goes, wow, that's too much. I go, yeah. And I go, I'm hoping to get 13. And I just wait. Cause I'm like Jewish and we like haggle and we like sell stuff. So I just wait. And then he goes, well, I'll give you 900 for it. And I go, and God goes, sure. And I go, okay. Because then I don't have to sell anymore and I can get out of this conversation. So I did a little bit of my codependent, like, I don't want to have boundaries and need stuff. But I did a little bit of like, but I'm not going to say what I want to say, which is 200. So we met in the middle and he took it for 900, which was great.
I really like that framing. You spoke truth, though. You said, I'd like to get 1300 for it. That's the truth. You didn't say, I'm going to charge you. You didn't attack him with a price. You stated the truth of the moment, which was, I would like
that's
to.
That's true. That's true. I wanted to see what he would, I just wanted to tell the truth and see what he would do with it. Because you never know who you're talking to about money. Like, you might be talking to someone who goes like, oh yeah, no problem, 1300. I run into that all the time with people. If you don't say too much and you go, well, we'd like to have this, and then you stop talking. People sometimes, if they have a fuck ton of money, excuse my language, they will say, oh, sure, that's not a thing. But I will have already projected onto them that they're going to say, what? 1300? That's crazy. Because some people get this on Facebook Marketplace, where I advertise the couch. I had people typing words to me like, you're an idiot if you spent $2,000 on that couch. What? And then another lady said, what makes you think this is worth $2,000? And I go, the store charged it. And I said, yes. What? Mean, judgmental shit. And part of me just goes, I have a really like, really, guys? We're going to be judgy about that? Okay, watch me. Watch me. I'm going to get it. Because come on, that's certainly not prosperity consciousness. We don't have to go all the way into like, you'll pay me double. But we also don't have to collapse into, never mind, you know. Never mind. You know, I don't need any money. I do. I fucking do. I don't know. I think we all find our midpoint on these things with the money, right?
Yeah, I think we do too. I have a lot of work to do around it. You know, a lot of it is how you grew up. You know, I grew up in a very working class family and, you know, I got a lot of their poverty consciousness that I have to work on and yet not go the other way so that it's all about money.
God, I know. I really know. I mean,
artist consciousness is sort of the same. It's like we are taught to undervalue ourselves because that's what we are offered at every turn.
Yeah.
So even when we start to set our own prices, we set them at half of what we really think we actually want.
Yeah. Yep. So much.
I tell artists who come to me for counseling, I said, look, one thing I want to tell you, you do beautiful art, don't try and sell it. Get an agent because you can't. You don't have the temperament.
Yeah, I mean, not a visual artist, just like as an actor or a performer. We all just kind of do that thing. I mean, Katie got good at it at a certain point. But you had a weird journey with it, I feel like, where you are like, it just doubled every time you went out. You were like earlier on when you were just touring your one person shows.
Yeah, I mean, I was really blessed on that one because this is Georgia Insides Out. You remember that show?
Yeah, of course.
That show, before I don't even know what the order of events was, but that was a weird miracle show where I couldn't stop it from touring. People would be like, come to Nebraska. And there was
it was brilliant. It was absolute brilliant.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me coming from you. Anyway, it was kind of like I was just learning about prosperity consciousness then and I was testing it. I would sort of, like when I first wrote the show, they'd say, oh, come do it at the blah, blah festival. What do you charge? And I'd say $500. And they'd go, great. And then and then the next person who'd ask me, I'd go, $900. And they'd go, great. And I'd go, sweet. And then I just kept trying a little bit more. And before I knew it, like people were flying me places and like putting me up at $5,000 here and there. Now, that was interesting because it was right before 2008. And when 2008 hit, all that shit went bye-bye. Right. And the whole dynamic fully changed. But for me, the gift was I had learned, okay, this really is about what you believe the thing is worth. And another thing I learned that was so important is like, what do I believe my time and energy are worth? And I right. think for me, one of the gifts of being hypersensitive, like I'm so energetically sensitive, is that I can't afford to devalue my time because I need lots of breaks and downtime. So the things I do when I work, they have to cost a fair amount for me to be balanced in my mm-hmm. nervous system. And I think sometimes mm-hmm. when we're tough and strong people, we go like, well, I can handle it and I'll just not charge a lot and do 80 sessions. But for me, I'm not tough, which thank you 12 Steps and Surrender for teaching me like who I really am. I have a tough personality, but my insides are just a pile of mush.
Yeah.
And the gift of that is I started to learn, well, I have to value that. You can't put a pile of mush on a cement job. It's gonna die.
Yeah.
And so me in and of myself had to become valuable. Like I wasn't gonna make it through life if I was being codependent about what people feel like paying me. And I'm talking now about healing sessions where it's like, you've been to 3 healing schools and I kind of know what I'm doing now. It's like, you have to pay for that. Cause I paid for the frickin' school.
Yeah.
And this is a tender beast.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear it because I'm trying to learn that myself as I retire, as I'm looking toward retirement in the next 16 months.
Really?
And I'll want to be doing some stuff to bring in some money. So I wrote the book about the 12 steps and, you know, we'll see. I'm going to do a workshop on it and see what happens. But the idea of charging people for it, just think, oh, no, poor people, they, you know, what the hell? They don't have the money and blah, blah, blah. But like you said, you know, we don't know that.
We really don't. What's the title of the book so we can promote it here?
It's called From Victim to Victory, A Spiritual Look at the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Very cool.
Or I guess Alcoholics Anonymous isn't in there. It's a spiritual look at the 12 steps. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I love it. I love it so much. And where can people buy that?
They can get it on Amazon right now, or they can email me at csasacramento.org.
csasacramento.org. Fantastic. Okay. I want people to buy your book. They should.
Now, what are you going to be doing in New York?
I don't know. Yeah, no, I do. Kinda, but not really. I am very much, Georgia, it is a 1 minute at a time endeavor. It is a, we need you to leap, so go ahead and leap. So I just keep showing up for the next indicated action. I know this much. Here's what I know. I'll always be doing healing sessions. So I'll see clients. That's the thing. I'll always be teaching. Well, at least this is how it seems now. Who knows what the future holds? More than likely, I'll always be teaching energy healing classes where I do, it's like group healing and spiritual principles sure. and that kind of thing. Because it's New York, I go, well, TV is there and I certainly know how to audition for stuff. So I think I'll hit some TV auditions and see what that yields.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Right?
Yeah.
It's there. It's there. And I got excited about it, but it was interesting because it was an afterthought. Like the guidance in prayer has been like, you need to go there. And I've been like, huh? No. And they're like, you're going. And so as I've sat with that, I've come back around to, oh yeah, I used to love that acting thing. What was that thing again? Acting. Oh, right. And you know, in New York, they do it on the TV screen where the money's real good. Why would I not try for that? Like I hit a bottom with theater a bunch of years ago, even professional regional theater, where I was like, these people do not pay us enough to do what this is like. Professional regional theater is athleticism. That this, what this man here does, this Cassidy Brown, we are athletes and they pay us not enough. And so I just was like, I don't need it. I can make things. I don't need it. And I was cranky about it and I was done. So then when God was like, okay, great, but you're going to New York. I was like, well, they have TV and they pay you well. So anyway, I'm going to try for some of that.
Good.
And then I have this strong vision of really sharing this podcast far and wide and opening the doors of perception to who wants to make this thing real visible. Because I can't tell you how deeply I believe in what we're doing here. We're bringing comedy and fun and playfulness to deep conversations like what we get to have with you today And then we open the records for, we do spiritual work. It's like, I just believe in it. It's the essence of my being is this blend of, you know me, the irreverence and the divine together, the sacred and the profane. And anyway, so I want to see what's possible with that. And I teach a couple classes online through Stanford's continuing studies. So like I have my classes and my healings and my classes and my show, and I'll throw a show up from time to time and podcasts and TV. So all the same stuff, really. We'll just see how it plays out. I'll be living on the Hudson River. What?
Wow. Gorgeous. Wow. So you already have a place. You're close to leaving.
Yeah, I'm leaving in about 12 days.
Oh, wow. Fabulous. Well, keep in touch because I want to know how you're doing.
Thank you. I will. And thank you, by the way, publicly for, I got a wild hair up my ass recently and applied to the Harvard Divinity School. And Georgia very generously wrote me a letter of rec. And thank you for that. I just wanted to,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you get in?
No.
No.
No. They actually, it was sweet. They wrote a letter that said, we let 5 people in, FYI. And I went, oh, well, that, thank you. They were like, you're great. Everything's great. And we can't. You're a little too weird for what we do here. And I was like, I get that. I hear that. I was worried it was going to be confining. Well, I do want to thank you for being here, Georgia. We can open your records, but I kind of get the feeling that's not where we're going unless you want to.
Well, I have to leave in a minute.
Okay.
When you say open the records, what does that kind of mean? You said, you know, pick a question.
It's basically we do a little, it would take more than a minute. So maybe we'll have you back on another time to do that portion of it. But basically, like we do a little meditation and then I say this particular prayer. And what that prayer does for me is it gives me access to your soul and its alignment to the divine. And then I can bring healing through on stuff, or I can answer questions from your higher self, essentially, and God. So it's kind of what I do with my clients, and it's what we do on here when folks want to go there. But I just get a feeling in my body of like, let's do that at a time when you have more time.
More time. Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Great.
We want half an hour or so to do it.
Okay. Okay. I thought this was for some reason, I know nothing about podcasts and I should learn more about it. I thought they were 30 minutes. And so I have an obligation that I have to be at 5.
No worries.
So, but thank you. Listen, I love you. I love you. And it was great to meet you, Cass.
Fantastic to meet you, Georgia.
Thank you for coming on. And please, everybody check out, where do they check out the church, Georgia? How do they, on the internet?
CSASacramento.org is the best way. And then they'll get a little video of the church and the website. And yeah, CSASacramento.org, one word.
Okay, awesome, and awesome. One more
time. I know
time.
A bunch of folks who do CSA in Oakland, but yeah.
Ah, very cool. One more time. Could you say the name of the book just once more so people can find that?
Victim to Victory, A Spiritual Look at the 12 Steps.
I love it. Thank you for being here, Georgia. It's so good to see you.
Buy the book.
You're welcome. All right. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Love you.
Thanks,
Have
Georgia.
Have a good
night. Bye. Great chatting with you.
You too.
Yay.
She's awesome. I would just hang out with her. I just want to like kick it.
Don't you?
Yeah, totally. Wait, before you leave, because I know we're wrapping up here, I have to get this out. I feel like if you had gone, and maybe you still could just call yourself this, but you would be the irreverent Katie Rubin. Rather than Reverend Rubin, you'd be irreverent Rubin.
That's good, really, right? Fucking good. That is
In
so
fact, I'm
good.
I'm shocked I've never heard that before.
I think I might need to say that on stage at some point.
Yeah, I'll be your preacher for the next hour. You can call me Irreverend Reuben.
Oh my God,
or
that's
Irreverend
so good.
Katie.
I feel like that's got to be some comedian who does spiritual jokes has to have said that at some point.
Has to have said it, but I've never heard it.
I haven't either. Isn't she the best?
She is the best. That was awesome. I loved the conversation. She's interesting, and She is like, as soon as she came on, and I hate to do it like based on appearance, but sometimes you see a person and you see their eyes. It's often just like see their eyes and you go, oh yeah, okay. I know, I kind of, type isn't even the right way, but it is like, there's like spirit. It's almost like the Enneagram where you'd be like, oh, this is a solid, this kind of person. And I can't even describe what that is, but I just feel it in my heart as soon as I see them. I kind of, there's a familiarity.
What was
And it
the-
might be like the old, the old sort of, you know, I think about like Joanna Macy, my mom's compatriot, who's like an older woman who's, you know, she's a Buddhist, very widely regarded Buddhist teacher and other type teacher. But there's this sort of, there's a look you see in some older women's faces that just makes me go, yep, like there's a relaxed but super present.
Hmm.
And it's in, and I mean, it's in the lines of their face too. I hate to say it that way, but like you see it and there's a,
mm-hmm.
there's a connection to like philosophy and just been there and I've thought about it. I've been there and I've thought about it a lot. So here I'm here to talk about it. And this is a snap judgment I make as soon as I see her face.
Could we call that wisdom?
Yeah, there's a wisdom, but I don't want to just be like the, oh, she's an old lady, so she's wise. Nope. It's different than that. There's a look in
I've met plenty of people's eyes.
Yeah,
I've met plenty of old ladies that are anything but wise. I don't think old lady equates
exactly
to wise, but Georgia,
yeah,
you know, and I don't even like, you know, I wouldn't call her an old lady, but I'd say like, you know, she's older than you and I.
Exactly.
And she's wise as hell. And also I think I would agree. She carries a kind of soft-heartedness, a peace.
Yeah.
Inside of her.
But it's a tough piece.
Yeah.
I see it immediately too. I see a toughness in certain people.
Well, I was just going to say her personality is strong and direct and tough, but her heart is soft and wise and supple. I would guess she's probably an 8.
Mm.
Who went from, because I knew her back in the day when she was starting the church, and she has softened like you would not believe. But that personality doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-mm.
The softness happens internally. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, I was listening to, I think it was This American Life today, and someone was analyzing their journey through an eating disorder.
Mm.
And a word that came up when she was talking to someone else who had been through similar situation that was really inspiring to her was the word sturdy. And she said when she was given that word, it made a huge difference in her approach. And it wasn't like, it doesn't just mean like, I'm beefy or whatever. It means sturdy, both emotionally and physically. And it doesn't necessarily mean strong, like physically. It just means my base is solid and I'm operating from a space of like consistency, like sturdiness. And I just appreciate that. So maybe that's the word I'm looking for. It's not tough, because tough means like feisty, right, mean, and throws punches. But like, just like, all right, let me start from this very solid base of human that can, you know, have their struggles and have their conversations. It's just something to be striven for. That's all.
Yeah. Yep. I sturdy feels right. I know her heart so well that I would say, yeah, she's got a strong outer delivery style, but mm-hmm. like myself, I think that's part of what I always related to about her is like when you get her in a room, there's so much compassion but it's blended with clarity and truth.
Mm.
Which, I think it's like, it isn't hard. It's, yeah, like you said, sturdy or strong and pliant. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that they taught me this idea in Sufi school. They said, if you think of a pliant thing, pliant things are stronger than hard things because right. you can't.
They bend, but don't break.
That's it.
They're not brittle.
Exactly. So like, yeah, I guess I experience her that way. She's like, what's that tree, not bamboo, but like you bend it, and you keep thinking it's going to break and it just never does.
The willow does that.
Is that right?
Yeah, it bends like all the way over, I think. It's now, you know, when she listens to this, she's going to be like, well, you just analyzed me in my absence thoroughly. That'll be interesting listening to someone talk about you in that way afterwards. I just realized that. Whatever. It's fine. Show me.
Well, we're not shitting on her.
No, not at all.
Listen, Cassidy, if you feel like shitting on a person, like I mean defecating.
That's between me and that person. And I would only do it with full. You're not going to shame me for it, though?
Yeah. No, that's what I was just going to say. Maybe call me first and we can talk about if it feels like an appropriate moment during which to do such a thing.
I thought you were going to want me to like FaceTime you while I was doing it. I was like, interesting choice, Katie.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It depends on the situation. Certain times I'm going to want to be there.
Okay.
Other times I'm going to say, honey, maybe not. Maybe not today.
But it is okay for me to ask because you have full agency to say no, right?
Right. Yes, absolutely. Okay, well, I'm glad we ended this on a fecal note.
A fecal note. That's like a fart. A fart is a fecal note.
We started the episode talking about I wasn't going to go fecal, and we ended it fecally.
Yeah. So, do your fecal work.
So do your work. Love you.
All right. I love you, Katie. Talk to you next time.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, friends of the podcast. How are you doing? How's it going for you? I hope all is well and shiny and bright and deeply surrendered and aligned and in flow. Just a small request and desire I have for your soul. Hey, listen, if you're interested in getting some really deep activation, spiritual healing and alignment for yourself, getting clarity on your own spiritual path, and or clearing or healing anything you need cleared or healed from your body, being, soul, or spirit, join me for 3 days of star being and Christ-light healing, October 1, 2, and 3 in upstate Massachusetts, or you can join online. It's a 3-day retreat where we're gonna zap a ton of crap right on out of your system and align you with the light in a really powerful way. October 1, 2, and 3. For details, give me a little email and I will email you back with everything you need. KLRubin, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. Additionally, consider joining us for 2 weeks in Egypt, November 15th to the 26th. 2 weeks in Egypt, friends. We're gonna go to the temples, we're gonna go to the pyramids, we're gonna go to the Sphinx, and we're gonna be raising the vibrational field of the planet to lift the weight of the recent trauma that we've all been going through for the past year or two from the planet itself, from the collective, and from our own hearts. So this will be a ton of healing and also like rad travels on the Nile and an integration time for 2 days at a beach at the end in Egypt. Have you always wanted to go to Egypt? Well, you should go. Now's the time. Email me, klrubin at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N at gmail.com.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
That was a Sounds Awesome production.